Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. This week's a little bit different. My co-host, Alex Spears, is not with me today. Prayers up for Al. He had surgery on his wrist earlier this week and is unable to join, but he should be back next week. But do not fear. I do have a guest with me. It's my good friend and coworker Fred Katz is going to join me here in just a second. But first, let's take a look at what happened in the NBA this week. Over the weekend, the Wizards did something they hadn't done since MJ wore a Wizards uniform, and that is win 8 games in a row. It's been 20 years. The Wizards have won 9 out of the last 10, including a nice controlled victory against the Lakers on Wednesday. Also from this weekend, Steph Curry set the record for the most threes made in a month at 85. He closed out the week with 96 three-pointers made and closed out the month. That's the new record. Somebody else go beat it. Monday night, the Timberwolves beat the Jazz for the third time this season after Rudy Gobert left D'Angelo Russell open for an easy layup to put the Wolves up late. The Wolves are currently second in the reverse standings and look to move lower as they have now won 4 in a row? Why now, T-Wolves? What are you doing? But also, another what are you doing moment, Kevin Love on Monday night had a little outburst late in the third quarter by batting the ball to the Raptors after the official threw him the ball to inbound. That wasn't me, Love said. I apologize for that moment. It was an ugly one. It was one that was not ill-intentioned. Okay, Kevin. Tuesday night, the Thunder snap a 14-game losing streak and miss what would have been a franchise record 15 losses in a row. Lou Dort said that he knew about the record and guaranteed a win for the Thunder, as he told Shai Gilgeous-Alexander earlier that day. Wednesday night, the Suns clinched a playoff spot by defeating the shorthanded Clippers. Chris Paul said this after the game, "Sometimes casual fans don't get a chance to appreciate somebody's greatness. And Devin is a guy who's been doing it on a daily basis. I'm just happy the world is finally getting to see him." Ooh, huge diss at all the casual fans out there. Another huge diss here. After the game, Paul George gave a next question to a reporter who asked how hard it is to contain Chris Paul. I love the chippiness between these two teams. We definitely deserve a Clippers-Suns playoff matchup. And the Kings lost by 49. We're a little over 2 weeks away from the start of the play-in tournament. I can't believe it, and I can't wait. All right, with me this week, it's not Alex. It's my good friend, Fred Katz. Fred, what's up?
The same thing as always is up. I am sitting around. I was watching basketball in my home. I'm wearing my pajamas. It's the same thing as it's been for the last 14 months.
I know. I only wear pants with an elastic band. Right now.
When I've worn pants with a button, like, it's like an occasion.
I know.
It's a celebration. And that's just pants with a button. I'm not talking tuxedo pants. I'm not talking slacks. I'm just talking the most casual pants with a button you can imagine.
Life is wonderful. It's totally great. Fred, tell me, what was the most interesting thing to you this week in the NBA?
All right. So I received my email this week, as did, I guess, 99 other NBA reporters, some writers, some TV people, some radio, I guess, saying, do you want to vote for awards this year? The NBA sends this email out every year. They ask who wants to vote. Most people say yes. Some people say no. And then a week or so later, after you say yes, the ballots come out and they say, here's the due date. You're voting on all the awards. So my most interesting thing is, I've really been thinking about the awards since getting that email. My most interesting thing is, who the hell am I going to vote for All-NBA guard. It is so difficult. And not just because there are so many guards having tremendous years this year, but because so many of the absolute best ones who you'd think would be shoo-ins and should be shoo-ins, and you kind of say off the top of your head, James Harden. Obviously, James Harden is All-NBA. He's James Harden, and he's averaging 25 and 11 on the team with the best record in the East. Of course he's a shoo-in. James Harden's played 42 games. If James Harden doesn't play, you can't put a guy who's played 42 games on All-NBA, even with this year being so strange. And I think a lot of people will give kind of extra slack to guys who miss a lot of games. There are so many difficult All-NBA decisions at guard. And I think you're going to see a gazillion guys, like way more than usual, receive votes at guard. And a ton of them are going to be justifiable.
Yeah. I guess we have to first decide who's a lock. Like, who are your locks? Like, Steph Curry has to be a lock, right?
Luka Doncic is a lock.
Is Luka, can we slide Luka to forward? Is that possible?
Yeah.
What's the,
well, so, but before we get to locks, what's better? It's your podcast. So what's better? Should we read off everybody who you could possibly throw into the conversation for any of the six spots, or should we go through the locks first?
Let's go through the locks.
Okay.
And then we'll debate who should be there.
Okay, you could put Luka at forward, but for the sake of the conversation, because I've got some guys who are going to have dual eligibility written down, but for the sake of the conversation, Luka's a lock, whether you put him at guard, whether you put him at forward. Maybe you do slide Luka over to forward, because forward's tough, but it's not as deep. And the thing is, you might end up having to put Luka on the second team if you put him at forward. Because you could have Kawhi and Giannis over there at forward on your first team. And I don't know. I mean, you could argue putting Luka ahead of either of those guys. But, I mean, I think I would probably have Kawhi and Giannis ahead of him if we're going with forward. So to get him on the first team, you might put him. It kind of depends on if you care about getting your six as good as possible or getting your first team as good as possible. Right. Luka's a lock either way. Dame has struggled the last 3-4 weeks. I still think he's a lock to get on.
Got to lock him in. Yep.
So that's three guys. Is Kyrie a lock?
Yes. Don't you think?
He's played 46 games and he's still hurt.
He's been unbelievable. He's been arguably the best net on a team of outrageously great players.
He's been incredible. It just comes back to, again, just the games played and the minutes. And some of it is not his fault at all. Some of it is his fault because he went to a maskless party and all of that. The numbers are absolutely incredible. He's 27 a game, 56% on twos, which is absurd for a point guard, 56% on twos. He's 39% on threes. He's 92% at the line. He has been the turning point in the Nets season. I shouldn't even say turning point, but the thing that to me validates, oh, I don't think the Nets are going to have any problems, is that he is so willingly let Harden do Harden things and has been unbelievably successful while still doing that. He's been incredible with Brooklyn, and that's why I wonder if he's a lock or not, because he's been great enough that I think he could overcome that. But 46 games, man, I know it's a shortened season, but even if you say there were 10 extra games that were playing 82 instead of 72 and Kyrie plays all of them, if he doesn't play again, or he ends up with like 50 games played, you know, if you have 60 games played in a normal season, or you want to prorate it, like 58 games played in a normal season, 57, like that could, missing 25 is really enough to knock you off almost no matter how good your numbers are. Very few guys have made it while playing in the 55 game range. Very few. It's really tough.
Yeah. I think becoming the guy that made the Nets work is enough for me, because of all the guys to choose, okay, this player's going to make the Nets run. He's going to make the decision that makes this Nets team work. I would have never picked him. There was just no way I would have ever picked Kyrie Irving to be the guy. And he's become that guy. I don't know, man. He's been a huge part of this. And if the Nets win the title. I mean, I would not be surprised to see Kyrie Irving Finals MVP. He's been that good.
He's been incredible. The game's played makes it tough for me to make him a lock.
Okay. We don't have to lock him in. I would argue for him to be on the team at least.
I'm okay with doing separate locks. We can have different locks.
I'm locking him. I'm there.
Perfect. I'm not locking. I'm going three locks. Okay. Steph, Luka, Dame. Can I list off the rest of these guys?
Wait. I already locked in Chris Paul and I put Luka out of here. You're not locking Chris Paul?
I'm not locking Chris Paul.
Whoa, why?
Because I'm going to read the rest of these guards off to you, and it's wild.
Okay.
All right. There's James Harden, who could come back and could play, and he's James Harden, who has played like James Harden this year. And there was a point where at least one person, James Harden himself, was putting himself in the MVP conversation.
Sure.
There's Bradley Beal, who's leading the league in scoring.
Yep.
There is Devin Booker, who's having a tremendous season. I agree with you. If I'm putting in a son, I'm putting Chris Paul ahead of him. There's Chris Paul as well. There are a lot of voters. I'm not necessarily this guy, but there are a lot of voters who look at, all right, this team had the best record in the league. They deserve two. This team had the best record in the league. They deserve one, or second best. They deserve one, so on and so forth. Rudy Gobert is making it, but especially based on the record, and also the fact that he's just had an incredible season. You could throw Donovan Mitchell on there, and it's fine.
Yes.
I would not put Trae Young on there.
No.
But he's...
No.
I would not put Trae Young in there, but I bet you somebody votes for Trae Young.
I hope not. He's taken a step back this season. There's just too many other guys that deserve it over him.
And then there are all the guys who have potentially dual eligibility. So last year, for example, LeBron was eligible at guard. I put LeBron at guard last year on my ballot. He was eligible at guard. If you go on Basketball Reference, it says he played about half of his minutes at point guard. And I know the league felt like, even though it seemed weird to put LeBron eligible at guard, the league felt like, well, the positional data has him listed as a point guard. We kind of have to make him eligible as both. So LeBron was eligible at guard last year. Obviously, I mentioned Luka was eligible at guard. Kawhi Leonard was eligible at guard last year. Jimmy Butler was eligible at guard last year. Ben Simmons was eligible at guard last year. Chris Middleton was eligible at guard last year. We don't know the positional eligibilities yet, but I assume all those guys will have dual eligibility this year as well. That is 15 players. You get six. How do you not put the league's leading scorer?
I put Beal on for sure.
I mean, Beal, it's not like Beal is throwing up an inefficient 31 a game. He has a 54% effective field goal percentage right now. He has been excellent and he's been wildly consistent all year. He's just good for 27 to 34 every single night. It's just what he gives you. He's also, I talked about Kyrie's 2-point shooting. He's 54, 55 on twos. It's a tremendous number for a 6'3 guard.
That's crazy for a guard. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's for a guy who people think of as a shooter, he's just not that. Like he's just a killer slasher. It's tough. It's tough. So who are your six? You have to throw them on. I'm forcing you to do it.
Boy.
So you say Curry, you say Doncic, you say Lillard, you say Kyrie. I guess you said Chris Paul and you said Beal. So are those your guys?
Chris Paul, Beal. I've got one more slot. Shoot, man.
Wait, do you have one more slot? Oh, because you're going to put Luka at forward?
Yeah, I'm not. No, he's too big. He's too big. Sorry, Luka. You're a forward. You're with LeBron. You're both forwards. Oh, you know, it was a real blessing that the Bulls started to really stink, because then you'd have to talk about Zach LaVine too.
True.
But now we don't, because they're too bad.
Not a blessing for Zach LaVine.
Not a blessing for LaVine.
A blessing for us in this podcast and nothing else.
It is. I know. And also, like, injury stuff. I mean, if you, CJ McCollum, if he didn't miss, and if the Blazers weren't so terrible, but if he didn't miss, like, he was on his way to being in the conversation. Jaylen Brown, too, the way that he started the season.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown's a guy I left off, but he's, I couldn't justify putting him on over someone like Paul or Beal.
Right.
He's,
you have to think about him.
He's going to make it at some point in his career, I feel like.
He should.
He's having a great year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's become a very good defender.
Jamal Murray, too. Like, Jamal Murray probably wouldn't have made it even if he was healthy, but you'd have to think about him for a little bit. Russell Westbrook, even. Like, Westbrook has been that good. And he will get votes.
Yes.
Don't you think?
He always gets votes.
Yeah.
He's going to get votes for all defense, too. He always gets votes for all defense. Always. Right. He's gotten votes for all defense. I bet you he's gotten votes for all defense 10 years in a row. I bet you he's gotten at least one 10 years in a row.
He should just be voted loudest player. Not vocally, but just the way he plays. Loudest player in the league.
Jamal Murray wasn't going to be... Jamal Murray was like, each year when I vote on this stuff, I put together spreadsheets. And I, even if I'm like, I know there's no way I'm voting for this guy, I just put him in the spreadsheet. Even though nobody sees the spreadsheet, nobody knows who I put in the spreadsheet other than the random 900 people who I call and ask for their opinions on All-NBA. Like, no one public sees it. Nobody knows. But I still put people in the spreadsheet. I don't know why. I guess I'm just, I want people, I'm so afraid of people disliking me so much that I'm like, these people who never see it are going to be like, oh God. Like, Jamal Murray would have been in my spreadsheet, but it would have been one of those guys like, why am I wasting my time typing in Jamal Murray's VORP? What am I doing here? This is such a waste of time. I could be binge watching some show. What am I doing? Yeah. But he would have made it in the spreadsheet, especially with the way he played his last like 2 months before he got hurt. He was great.
No doubt. No doubt. And if the Nuggets are like the one seed or something, you kind of feel obligated to throw another person. That's and that's, gosh, this is, so I'm between Booker and Mitchell right now is where my head's at. And I think I lean Booker with the season that he's had, with the leap I feel like he's made on the defensive end. I think he's been so great. And by the time that people are listening to this, the Suns may have overtaken the Jazz in the standings. Because the Jazz are playing without Mitchell. They're playing without Mike Conley. And if the Suns are the one seed heading into the playoffs, which seems like that could be the case, they're one of the teams at the top that is just continues to push. And if they're the one seed, I think I would be one of those people that would say the Suns deserve more than one player on the All-NBA team. And so I'll say that my six are Steph, Chris Paul, Lillard, Kyrie, Beal, and Booker.
See, I think it's kind of hard to justify Kyrie and not Harden. There's not a huge total minutes between those two. So I'm kind of caught between that logic. And that's why I wonder if Chris Paul is a lock, you know? Mm. And I voted Chris Paul second team last year.
He's been just as good or maybe better. Yeah.
He's been just as good. He Phoenix is one of the best. They're one of the most balanced good teams in the league. You know, they defend the hell out of the ball and they have a great offense. And Chris Paul spearheads both of those sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. And there are very few guys in the league. If you go through and you say, who is the captain of the defense and the captain of the offense, and the team is really good. And that's a thing in very few other places.
Yep.
You know, it's not even, I don't even think you could necessarily say it's true for LeBron in LA, because Anthony Davis is their top defensive player. And that doesn't automatically make him, Chris Paul, an All-NBA player. But it does mean he's just tremendously important and his job is ridiculously hard. And it's more than just he's smart and he's savvy. But that being said, you know, what if Harden and Kyrie end up playing the same amount?
Fred, I don't know if I count the few hundred minutes that James Harden played in Houston as a part of his campaign for this.
Ooh.
Can we just remove that from the equation altogether? He played almost 300 minutes with Houston. There's not one person in the entire world that would have said, hey, that guy on that team at this time deserves to be on the All-NBA team. No way.
That's fair. That was part of this season. And yeah, I get it. I got into a debate. It wasn't really a debate, but I got into a hearty conversation with our colleague and a good friend of both of ours, Dave Dufour, about James Harden. And I forget if it was in reference. I black out when I get into basketball arguments. So I forget if it was in reference to MVP or All-NBA. But Dufour was saying, like, whatever Harden's numbers were in Houston, you know, they were still ridiculous numbers. He comes back and he has 45 points and 17 assists, right? In his first game back. And there were still ridiculous numbers he was putting up. And Dufour says,
sure,
he's going out there. He's still winning them games. I was like, Dave, it's just one of those you gotta be there kind of things. And you were there. So you know. So I'm with you. All the Houston stuff that has to come
If we made Jimmy Butler pay for what he did to the Timberwolves, mm-hmm. right? It was almost like, hey, we're going to make you can do this. Cool. You're going to pay for it in all-star voting or whatever it is.
Yep.
It's like James Harden, like, oh, he's got the magic back. He's sharing the ball. Look at he's playing off ball. Like the minute he moved off ball, everybody's like, oh, all is forgiven. You know, it's like, come on, man.
To me, it's less about paying a penalty and more just about if we're voting on what the aggregate value that a guy provided was throughout the year. Well, Harden had about 3 weeks where things weren't going so great. So that's kind of more what it is to me. And I think it's kind of the other side of the Chris Paul coin. So there are all these people who are throwing Chris Paul in the MVP conversation now. I'm like, that's wild.
That's a little forced.
That's crazy forced. But the logic behind that is, what a leader. Chris Paul comes in and he transforms your locker room and he transforms your culture and he transforms the way the team operates in every facet of the game on and off the court, right? And I'm not saying any of that is wrong. I think it's pretty clear that all of that is true. But what I'm saying is if we're going to credit a guy for that, well, the Harden-Houston stuff is kind of the other side of that same coin, right? So
yes.
So, yes. You know, you have to recognize when the opposite is happening as well. And sometimes it's really hard to tell when the opposite is happening. And when the opposite is happening as an awards voter, I always try to give the player the benefit of the doubt because I think it's a lot worse if that is happening. And, or I should say, I think it's a lot worse if that's happening and a guy still makes NBA than if it's not happening, but I think it's happening. And then I hold it to a guy's detriment. And yeah, I'd much rather just vote for a guy who was a problem on a team than not. But with Harden, I don't know. Everybody said it.
He put it on Instagram. Come on. And it's funny because he's not one of the guys that puts everything on Instagram. He put it on there so that everybody would see it.
Yeah. I mean, Wall was open talking about it. Cousins was open talking about it. Like,
yes.
Yeah, we know. Silas looked like
I feel like right now. Hold on, Fred. Right now, I feel like you're delaying your pick. Mm. Are you going to give us your picks?
Okay, I have the right to change my mind as soon as 3 minutes from now. This is not who I'm voting for. This is just kind of what I got. I might slide Luka to forward.
Okay.
And this is kind of what I have as of today. I'm not anticipating what's going to happen the rest of the year. But as of now, I've got Curry and Doncic as my first team. Mm-hmm. I'll put Lillard and you know what's amazing? I put all these together. I looked up the numbers. I prepared the stats, and I forgot to make the actual team. So I'm literally doing this off the top of my head. So I'm going to go Curry, Doncic on my first team. I'm going to say Lillard and Beal is my second team. I would have Kyrie's second team if he actually put up more, like he actually started to play more games. And third team, I'll go Chris Paul and Kyrie.
I like that.
And that's what I got.
Okay. I think we did it. I think that we did
it. We did it. No one has to vote now. It's good.
just listen
did
to
Did we
this.
Have
this
the same teams you know. After all that?
I think so. Well, you had Luka, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I had Steph, Chris Paul, Lillard, Kyrie, Beal, and Booker.
Right. But it's not like you didn't have Luka. You just have Luka at forward.
He's there. Yeah, he makes the team. I was going to give my most interesting thing, which was the Utah Jazz and how everybody's sleeping on the Jazz. I had some big George Niang stats for everybody, which I just think that guy is very interesting. I'll just give you one. He's shooting 43% on above the break threes. Wow. He's been super good for them, but we don't have time for that.
Wait, can you just give one more George Niang stat?
So, okay. Yes. I'll give one there more and then we have to get to our guest, Jason Jones. So the third best 5-man lineup in the league is a Jazz lineup. The best lineup in the league is the Clippers. So big shouts to the Clippers. Sorry if I insulted you guys too much. You guys are great. I actually believe in you quite a bit this season. Second is a Portland lineup that is just outrageous on offense and kind of meh on defense. But the third best lineup, they're a plus 15 net rating. Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles, and George Niang is a part of this lineup. One of the best lineups in the league. It doesn't include Mitchell, but it just shows the versatility that they have in these guys. And him being a lights out shooter has been a huge part of the success of the Jazz. There, if you can just throw lights out shooters, I mean, Joe Ingles, who's been ridiculous this year, but just having just that one more guy, like it's no wonder Jordan Clarkson has been able to do whatever he wants on the court because you can't leave anybody.
And I'll tell you what, that lineup is a great piece of evidence for why the Jazz have possibly two guys who are going to be on my sixth man of the year ballot.
Yeah, and they should.
Yeah, I mean,
without a doubt.
Joe Ingles is pacing, at least he was as of like 2 days ago, because I've been following this for weeks. He is pacing to break the record for highest true shooting percentage by a perimeter player ever. Not in the modern era. Not in the last 10 years, not in the last 20 years, not since 1950. The highest true shooting percentage ever for a perimeter player, ever. The only players with a higher true shooting percentage in a single season are like Mitchell Robinson. It's like guys who only dunk. It's like Mitchell Robinson, Tyson Chandler, and maybe Wilt, and I think that's it. It's ridiculous.
Well, and you know what franchise cut that player?
The Clippers.
It was the Clippers. Sorry, Clippers. All right. We are going to take a quick break. After that break, we are going to talk about a team that is not as great as the Utah Jazz. We're going to talk to Jason Jones and talk Sacramento Kings. And we're back from that quick break, and it's time for the Wheel of Fandom. Each week, we have a new team that is selected by the Wheel. And I'll tell you, the Wheel definitely selected the team this week because it's the Sacramento Kings, because nobody in their right mind would be doing a podcast about the Sacramento Kings right now, but we do here on Saturday Slam and Jam. The Kings right now are 11th in offense, 30th in defense, 25th in net rating. They went 1-2 this week, including a 49-point loss to the depleted Jazz. And because we have the Sacramento Kings, we get to welcome my guy Jason Jones onto the podcast. Jason, what's up?
Not much. I'm doing better than the Kings were the other night. I mean, and just for me, what made it crazy was, to me, that's not even their worst loss of the season to me.
Well, what's the worst loss?
It was in terms of, to me, it was the Detroit game where they've got a chance to maybe get some momentum going again and maybe still hang around to get to 10th. And they let the Detroit Pistons walk in there without Jeremy Grant and led by former King Corey Joseph, beat them up for four quarters.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, it was comical. Like Corey Joseph is laughing at them because the Sacramento fans couldn't stand him, and they were all like, "We're going to be so much better because we got DeLon Wright and got rid of Corey Joseph." And Corey had like 24-10. So to me, that was by far the worst game I've seen. I was like, "You're going to let him just beat you up," and they just let it happen.
Oh no! So with that, how do you describe this season? Like, if there's like one word or one phrase that you'd use to describe this Sacramento Kings season, what would it be?
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that's, they've had two stretches where they've won 7 of 8. They also have 2 9-game losing streaks and a stretch where they lost 9 of 11, but they started the year 3-1.
Yeah.
So just weird. You know, they always talk about being consistent, inconsistent. I just say weird because teams that are bad are going to be up and down. Mm-hmm. But there's moments where you're thinking, oh, maybe they can get into at least top 10, top 9. Then you go, this is one of the worst teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And that happens within a week of each other. Just all year it's been that way. Start off 3-1, you're a surprise. Next thing you know, you're 5-10. You know, it's just up and down, up and down. They finally got to 500 and then – lost 9 in a row. So, yeah, I mean, it's very, very quite the roller coaster.
Jason, what do you make? Is there any way for them to fix the defense? Like, they are so, they're not just 30th in defense. Like, they are extremely 30th. They've turned 30th into its full descriptor. They gave up 154 points the other night.
Yeah, I forgot one guy on the Jazz. He played 12 minutes and got 13 points. I mean, it was just, from what they tell you when you talk to people around the team, they tried to, you know, get a scheme that would help. Something didn't click. And from what they've said, they basically stripped down their scheme so much defensively to, could you guys just try to guard your man and play hard? And that's still a struggle. I mean, they do have limitations with their roster. They're not a very big team. And when they play Philadelphia, Luke Walton said after the game, their point guard is bigger than my center, which is true. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, they're not a very big team. They don't have physical guys. I mean, they were asking Harrison Barnes all year to guard essentially 1 through 5 or 1 through 4. You know, it's just they have roster limitations. You know, some would say they have scheme limitations. You know, depending on who you ask, but they, you know, it's kind of hard to assess a scheme when guys, you know, just get beat off the dribble repeatedly. And they just have a collection of guys who don't stay in front of people. You know, a lot of people get mad at Buddy Hield about it, but he's not the only one. I mean, I think Buddy's trying. He's just not very good at defense. They got a guy like De'Aaron should be better, but he tends to pick his spots. But when you have the worst defense in the league, you really can't pick your spots. No one can afford to pick their spots. I mean, some of the guys on the team believe Rashawn Holmes should get some run for like all defensive team on some level for what he does for them. But I'm like, it's going to be hard for anyone to justify voting for a player on the worst defense possibly in NBA history to be all anything defense. Just how do you justify that? You know, it could be even worse without him. You know, and that's no knock on Rashawn. Rashawn's doing all he can, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that Utah game was amazing. I was just like, okay, yeah, I know the Kings were down Harrison and De'Aaron, but just say, you know what? To be down 54 in a game you were only down 3 at the end of the first quarter.
Right.
They gave up, I think, 86 points in 2 quarters. And it was an easy 86 for Utah. It wasn't like they had to work. I mean,
is there a difficult 86 in 2 quarters?
No, it wasn't, you know, this
a
wasn't
hard
back
fought
in the,
for 86 and 2 quarters.
Yeah, this wasn't like back in the 90s where Jeff Van Gundy would have been happy to get to 86 and 4 quarters. I mean, this was like, you know, you think of, I mean, they scored 124 points in 3 quarters.
That is outrageous.
Yeah, I've seen them do this before. They did it in Toronto. I mean, I think this is the second time this year they've given up a franchise record for the opponent. And both times it was in regulation. Toronto set their record with 144 in regulation, and that was a game where they scored like 100-something points in 3. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. You know, you almost feel bad. I don't know who to feel bad for.
Yeah. Well, let's spin it forward a little bit.
Okay.
So De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton are probably the only two core members of this team. Am I wrong? Is there somebody else? Are they going to try to keep Rashawn Holmes? Like, what's, if you were to say in two seasons, these guys will most likely be a king, who would you say is on that list?
In two seasons, see, that gets tricky for me with Harrison, because by then he'll be like, I think at the end of his deal, then maybe right. You do move him. But I would just based on what the organization and the coaches feel, I would include Harrison in there. Rashawn okay. is tricky because how much do you pay? You know, big men are devalued anyway. And mm-hmm. for as important as he is, you break down the number, he's averaging about 14-9. Maybe next year, maybe if the price is too high, you let Rashawn walk and you keep Damian Jones and someone else and get, 15-10 between two guys. Mm-hmm. So I think, the players and the coaching staff would love to say that Rashawn is a part of the core. Rashawn would love that. I mean, this is his first chance he's ever had to be a starter. Mm-hmm. But, it's always that tricky thing with bad teams. He may be your best player or one of your best players, but what are you doing with someone who's a good player on a bad team? How do you truly value that? Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to make a decision on him in the summer. But really the two guys I always say is we know the GM likes De'Aaron because De'Aaron got the extension and he drafted Tyrese. Outside of that, to me, this whole thing could be anywhere. We don't know where Marvin Bagley will be in a few months. This thing could, change a whole lot, in a few months.
I just want to know where Marvin Bagley's dad is going to be.
I don't know if the Kings, if he gets hurt again, the Kings might let him go hang out with his dad again, Which was another weird, bizarre Kings thing. You let an injured player go home to his family.
Yeah, explain that a little bit, because I don't know how many people that has gotten to.
No one can really explain it. It's just that after Marvin broke his hand in Charlotte, you started noticing that Marvin wasn't on the sideline. It's not uncommon that an injured player, especially with the protocols and the mask, might stay in the back and watch the game by himself. That didn't seem crazy. Then it's like, okay, we really never see Marvin on the bench ever. Then you find out, oh yeah, the team let him go home. Home to Phoenix. And they're like, we're keeping in touch with him down there. I was like, well, shouldn't he be here? With his teammates, maybe with your doctors and trainers, it was just a very weird thing. And then when it's not like he just decided on his own to come back, when the team played in Phoenix, they're like, we're going to go play the Suns. And then Marvin will basically meet us, join up with us there and we'll bring him back home. And it was like, okay, I guess. And no one's really explained it. I think Luke Walton defers to the GM. The GM doesn't talk to us. And we haven't talked to Marvin in over maybe since early March. So no one's really explained what's going on. One theory that was passed along to me was that the team is pretty much done with him anyway, so they didn't care. But I'm like, that doesn't make the team look good. No. It's more enabling, which is one of the things the Kings have been guilty of for years, is you're a bad team enabling players to do what they want. And it's like, there's no one on this team who's earned the right to do whatever they want. There is no LeBron, KD, Russ figure on this team who should be able to dictate anything. And even then, you got to be careful with players dictating things. But it's like, it's just a weird, like I said, it's just weird. I've never seen a player. I mean, Marvin's been hurt a lot, but never has he just left. But the thing is, before his brother was in high school playing in the Sacramento area, his brother was back at Arizona State. That's where the family's from. So that's where Marvin was rehabbing for a while. And then he's been cleared, but he's not playing yet. He's been cleared to do basketball activity. So you would assume at some point they get him back on the court by the end of the year, but you never know with this team. You really never know.
It doesn't help trade value if you're going to signal that you don't really, that you're just done with a guy before you actually try to trade him too, when he was the number two pick only a few years ago. I got one for you.
Right. And the trade value wasn't there anyway before this. So I mean, I don't know what they're not exactly driving up the price with this.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. So De'Aaron Fox's max extension kicks in next year. He's actually been a bright spot this year. He's been really good this year. I really like Fox. I think he's going to be a really good player. Do you think he's a top 10 point guard? because you look at him play and you see him average, you see a young point guard who's one of the fastest guys in the league. He controls pace. He's explosive. He's averaging 25 a game. And you watch him play and you're like, this guy's awesome. But point guards are just so plentiful now, and there are so many good ones. You look at the max extension, and it's intuitive. The Kings have to give him a max extension.
Right.
But do you think he's top 10 now? And do you think he'll be top 10 over the course of that contract?
See, I got to think about who's in the top 10. Cause I'm just thinking off the top of my head, Steph, Dame, Kyrie, Chris Paul. If you throw Luka as a point guard, that's five right there. And then if you throw Russ, that's six. Do you consider James Harden a point guard?
Not if Kyrie is one.
Okay. All right. Well, take Kyrie out, make James a point guard. You know, I'm just trying to think. I think I would still put him over young guys like LaMelo, or, you know, maybe I'd probably still put him ahead of a Ja Morant. So maybe he's at 10.
How about
– maybe he's
– there are a couple other guys. How about Mike Conley? Mm-hmm. Who would you take right now?
I'd take Mike Conley right now ahead of him, just because the defense and, you know, being a vet. See, now you got me thinking. So, you know, Mike would be ahead of him right now.
How about Trae Young?
I'm just trying to. To me, they're similar. I think Trae is a better score, probably a better, you know, outside shooter. But, you know, you might put, you know, he's probably more explosive scoring, and he gets more assist. You know, so maybe you put Trae ahead of him. I mean, to me, just off the top of my head, De'Aaron's in that, he's not in that top level. He's in that middle, you know, that second, that, you know, maybe borderline 10. I was talking to somebody the other day. Right now, this stage of his career, in a lot of ways, he reminds me of Monte Ellis. And not in the style of play, in the sense that you look at his numbers and you go, wow, he's putting up these great numbers. Then you watch the team and you go, a lot of these games, you know, he's, you know, it's not all his fault, but the numbers aren't equating to wins. It's not all on him, but it's hard to put someone, you know, you got to be, you know, especially in this day and age where point guards are so good. It's, you know, like I said, he's not ahead of Drew Holiday, you know. So, you know, there's so many good point guards, even with his numbers. That doesn't mean he's, you know, a top 10 guy. I mean, I think we just ran through at least 10, 12 guys who you might take ahead of him. And then some of it's situational. I mean, do I think Dennis Schroeder is a better player? No. But when you watch Dennis Schroeder play against him, Dennis Schroeder has shown he can impact the game more at times. So, you know, De'Aaron's only 23. I think by the end of this contract, he'll be in that conversation. And the one, unless, you know, say Tyrese passes him, you know, and so there's a lot of people who believe that, you know, in 2 or 3 years, it'll basically be Tyrese running the team and De'Aaron will be the two.
Yeah. Halliburton's great.
You know, a lot of people believe that's going to be the eventual setup.
Halliburton's great. Yeah. He's so poised for a rookie, and he can shoot the hell out of the ball already. He's just, he's a great decision maker, man. He is really good.
Yeah, I got to tell people, they didn't draft him, they created him. There's no way. He only went to college for 2 years. I mean, you listen to him talk and watch him play. His dad was a big Magic Johnson fan, and you see so much of Magic, the way he talks, the way he plays. I mean, you will never hear Tyrese Halliburton say that the team is going to be his. He's always deferring to De'Aaron and Harrison Barnes. He's always like, you know, those guys. Though he's probably his hardest critic. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better rookie.
Unbelievable. Yeah, there's not been a lot of luck to come the Kings' way, but that is certainly one of those. Let's talk about Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley. Give me the odds for both of these guys that they'll be traded this summer.
I'd put the odds with Marvin at 50-50. I think it'd go either way, depending on the availability. And with Buddy, I'd put it a little lower just because of his contract, and it depends on how you value him. People I talk to, a lot of people in the league believe he's really a sixth man. That's his best role on a good team. But with his contract, you're paying him like a starter. And who's going to value, you know, the one thing about his deal, it does decline in value over the life of it. But still, you're looking at $20-something million next year for him. And talk about making a deal. I mean, he, how do you make that work? And the thing is, even for, you know, for his liabilities, say defensively, you know, he's not a good ball handler. The game was last week against the Warriors where he gets the, he makes the play, gets the steal, and then just fumbles the ball out of bounds when he could have gave him the lead in the closing seconds. You kind of, you know, with Buddy, you're going to get nights where he's a great shooter, but you're going to get nights, you know, pretty much every game he's going to make two or three decisions to make you go, what was that? Mm-hmm. You know, but he can shoot, and shooting's at a premium. And when he's hot, not many guys can shoot like him. The problem is that sometimes, as I tell everyone, Buddy's favorite player is Kobe. And sometimes he thinks he is Kobe, and he tries to go to his ball handling. It's just, it doesn't work out well for him. You know, I mean, they've had games where you're like, okay, Buddy, just, you know, I think a week or so ago, Luke Walton said, when it comes to Buddy, catch and shoot when you're open, great. If you can't catch and shoot, drive straight to the basket. If that's not there, give the ball up. And it's tough when you got to tell your starting two guard, you can only dribble straight ahead or catch and shoot, you know, and that's, and it hurts him late in games because he's a great shooter, but they don't want to make decisions. So you don't want to give him the ball to make a decision because there's a chance that he's probably going to, he could force a shot or the ball can end up in the stands and me trying to dribble it.
Sounds like he's going to stay a king to me. I think he talked every team out of him.
He sounds like a wizard to me.
I could see a lot of teams where he would help. It was just funny, you know, when he was on last summer liking all the stuff about him being in Philly. And then they add Dave Yeager, who he couldn't stand as coach. So it's like, I guess that meant, you know, you may not want to go to Philly. But, I mean, he would fit on a team like that just because the responsibility would be Buddy catch and shoot. And I think on a good team where he has good players around him, he'd be fine with that. But, you know, when you have a bad team, players are going to try to do more than what they probably should do because, well, you're bad. And everyone's trying to do something to make you not be as bad. But sometimes that actually hurts you.
Yeah. It's time to move on to our Saturday Slam and Jam game show.
Sorry to make everyone sad. But, you
know. That's okay. That's okay. It's time for Fred versus the Beat. This is a game show where we have 8 questions, and you will choose a number that corresponds to a particular question. If you get your question right, that's worth 2 points. If you miss it, the other person will have a chance to steal. That will be worth 1 point. Whoever has the most points at the end of this will win the game.
Yeah.
Jason, we'll let you start. Pick a number between 1 and 8.
5.
In 2004, an expansion draft was held to construct the 30th NBA team, the Charlotte Bobcats. The most notable player chosen in that draft was Sacramento Kings forward Gerald Wallace. Name 2 other players selected in the expansion draft.
The only guy I knew for sure was Gerald Wallace. I'm stumped. I have no idea.
Fred, chance to steal?
Oh, man. Was Brevin Knight drafted in that? And I cannot think of anyone else on those Bobcats team.
Some notable players taken in the expansion draft. Fred, Marcus Fizer, Jason Capono, Zaza Pachulia, who was later traded, Sasha Pavlovich, who was later traded, Primoz Brezic. Does that ring a bell for you? And then lots of no-name guys. But yes, I would have maybe given you a credit if you would have gotten at least one of them. But you didn't. That is definitely one of the hardest questions.
I was going to say, if this is setting the tone, like...
Okay, Fred, pick a number between 1 and 8.
2.
Number 2. What was the city of origin for the Sacramento Kings?
Kansas City.
That is incorrect. Jason.
Rochester?
Rochester is correct. Boom, you're on the board. That's 1 point for Jason. And you have control of the board.
Let's go with 8.
In game 4 of the 2002 Western Conference Finals, Robert Horry hit a buzzer-beating 3 to beat the Kings and tie the series at 2-2. This is a 2-part answer. Who tapped the ball out to Robert Horry? And then there were 2 shots taken that were both missed. Give me one of the guys that missed a shot.
Lotte tapped it out to Robert Horry. Mm-hmm. And Kobe missed one of those shots.
That is correct.
Shaq both missed the other one. Jason.
Yes, exactly. Okay, Fred, Pick a number between 1 and 8.
3.
In 1998, the Kings traded for 25-year-old budding star Chris Webber from the Washington Wizards. Although GM Wes Unseld said that Webber's off-the-court problems played hardly any factor in the trade, he frequently peppered remarks with words like maturity, leadership, intangibles, and chemistry when discussing the benefits of the trade. Who are the two other players that the Wizards traded for?
So you're giving me the Wizards trivia question. And I still yes. don't know it. Who was the Webber trade? That was 1998. I don't remember. Jason's got it. Jason knows.
Mitch Richmond and Otis Thorpe. Mm.
Bingo.
Mitch Richmond.
That's right. Absolutely correct. The Wizards would go on to win a franchise low 18 games the season after they traded Chris Webber. Jason, you're up.
Let's go with 4.
Two players rank in the top 5 in total career steals and blocks for the Kings. One of them is Sam Lacy, which I would not make you guess, but who is the other King?
I'm not sure. I'm going to say Vlade.
That is incorrect. Fred, chance to steal.
No, I'm denying my chance to steal. I turn it to you.
Was it DeMarcus?
It is DeMarcus Cousins. That's right.
Okay, I knew I was like steals and blocks, and I think the two guys, you know, the guys who were the big men who would get a lot of steals would have been one of those two.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it was Boogie. All right, Fred.
By the way, just to let you know, as an homage to the Kings, I'm going to lose by 49.
Yeah.
7.
Oh, this is by far my favorite one. In 2014, the Kings allowed Grantland to come in and make a mini documentary of their draft process, which culminated in the Kings selecting Nick Stauskas and the whole draft room yelling Nick Rocks into Pete D'Alessandro's phone.
So we're going to say 1, 2, 3, and we're all going to shout Nick Rocks, okay? You ready? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Nick Rocks!
Who is the other player that they would have taken if it wasn't Stauskas?
Klay Thompson?
Klay Thompson is incorrect. Chance to steal for
Alfred
Jason.
Alfred Payton
is absolutely correct. Alfred Payton, but it was Stauskas.
That was one of the best moments.
Stauskas.
All right, Jason, 2 more questions left. Okay, 1 or 6?
We'll go with 1.
Since 2006, the Kings have had 11 different coaches. We're going to go back and forth between you two until one of you misses on a coach.
I've had most of those guys. This will be fun.
So we'll start with you, Jason. Just name one of the 11 coaches, and then we'll go to Fred, and we'll go back and forth.
Luke Walton.
Okay. Tyrone Corbin.
George Karl.
Buddy Hield's guy, Dave Yeager.
Dave Yeager. That is correct.
Michael Malone, my buddy.
Malone, that is correct.
Rick Adelman?
Paul Westfall.
Oh. Hang time, Reggie Theus.
Yes, Reggie Theus. Hang time.
All time yes. show.
Eric Musselman.
There's no way I'm going to win this. There's no way I'm going to be able to name every Kings coach, and there's no way he's not going to remember every Kings coach.
There's 2 left, Fred. There's 2 left.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of anybody else. I can't think of the last 2.
Jason, you want to tell him?
Keith Smart, Kenny Natt.
Yep, that's right. Keith Smart and Kenny Natt. Those are the 11 coaches since 2006.
That's wild.
Unbelievable. Do you think that they'll have another one starting next season, Jason?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, a month or two ago, I was pretty sure they wouldn't, and it still sounds like they're not. But then again, this is also the same team who gave Vlade Divac an extension and fired him like 16 months later.
Yep.
So, I remember after the bubble, I'm saying, they're not going to fire Vlade. I mean, they had a decent season, all things considered. They gave him an extension a year ago, let him fire the coach and bring in a new guy. Fired him anyway. So I've given up thinking I know anything. Just when you think you know, they change it on you.
Okay, Fred, this is a question just for your dignity, Right now, you are down 5-0. You are
Pretty good.
it's like 50-0. This is like when the Kings sunk that three at the end of the game to make it not losing by 50. So don't lose by 50 here, Fred. Since 1981, the Kings have had 6 different players make the All-Star team. In 4 of those seasons, they have had 2 All-Stars in the same season. Chris Webber and Peja did it twice. Give me the other 2 Kings combo All-Stars.
Since what year?
81.
The other 2 Kings combo All-Stars since 81.
I'll tell you, I'll give you this hint just because I want you to not lose by 50. It's not in the 80s.
Okay. It's not in the 80s. Can I phone a friend? I've got my friend Jason on the line.
I can take a stab at it. I'm thinking Paige and Brad Miller.
Oh, Brad Miller is one.
Yeah, and, yep. Weber and Vlade.
Weber and Vlade. Mm. Ding, ding, ding. Fred has no dignity. Thank you so much for joining in on Fred versus the Beat, where Fred lost 6-0. So sorry, Fred. Well, lucky for you, Fred, Alex will be back in this seat. And lucky for me, I'll be on the other side next week. We thank you so much for joining us, Jason. Thanks for giving us all the King's knowledge possible and for just absolutely destroying Fred in this trivia contest. Thanks again, man. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
Well, it is now time for the Wheel of Fandom. Each week, we let a digital wheel determine our fate, which team we will choose to be a fan of for one whole week. We'll watch the games. We'll read all the articles. Let's see who it's going to be. Wheel of Fandom. Turn, turn, turn. Who's it going to be? It is the... No, it's the Timberwolves. Oh my goodness, the Timberwolves, who are 4-0 in their last 4 games. They are ruining their own tank here. Okay, Alex, I know you're listening. I wish you were here with me, but we are going to watch the Timberwolves for this next week. Thanks so much for joining us for this week's edition of Saturday Slam and Jam. Send Alex some get well notes. You can find him on Twitter at AlBabyCakes. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And this week, our Apple Podcast review of the week comes from Dave Abbott Zero. Dave says, I've listened to Andrew and Alex on Down to Dunk for a while now and always enjoy their coverage of the Thunder, but these guys have taken the NBA podcasting to the next level with the Saturday Slam and Jam. Dare I say, it's one of the best things to happen to the NBA since NBA Jam. Birthday celebrations, trivia, and all the NBA news of the week in one podcast. It's a must for any NBA fan. Dave, thanks so much for leaving that review. If you want your review read on the podcast, just leave us 5 stars. Make sure you mention Slam and Jam, and you can have your review read on the podcast as well. Hope you guys have a great weekend, and we will talk to you guys again next week.